by the agencies. And I think I'll do the same thing for the two DPH as well, because at least one of the DPH has two potential people who can come now. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then after we do the roll call, I'll ask any non-members of the group to also introduce themselves. Okay, so HIV Health Services.
Here.
Positive Resource Center.
Here.
Wade Flores.
Present.
Marion Ortiz. ALRP.
Yes, here.
Population Health. Lee Jewell.
Here.
SFA Foundation.
Here.
Prevention Council.
Here.
Rachel Metayama.
Here.
Matthew Miller.
Here.
Shanti. Ken Pierce.
Here.
City Clinic.
Here.
Catholic Charities. Charles Cerrone.
Here.
Chip Zapanich.
Here.
API Wellness Center. Project Open Hand. All right, we do have quorum. Any members of the, any non-members of the group?
So I think I'm here for population.
So you're Hannah Hewitt?
I am Hannah, yeah.
Okay, so that will be you when I call population up.
Perfect. Thank
any
you.
Other?
And I'm Carrie Kozerski from West Side. I was thinking as like an alternative. I believe it was going to have the voting power, but the ability to sit in.
Great, welcome. So since I did call agency names, I actually just go around and introduce her. Well, Mark Molnar, council staff.
Lee Jewell, council co-chair for HIV Health Services.
TJ Lee.
Planning Council.
TJ Lee, San Francisco AIDS Foundation, Boston Force, and Member Manager.
Rachel Matuliano, council member.
Pastor, council member.
Chip Zapanich, council member.
Kathleen
York,
population health division.
Andrew Lopez, member of the Community Project Planning Council.
Joey Wong, from Positive Resource Center. Carrie Kozerski from Westside Community Services.
Andy Shear from the City Clinic.
Wade Flores, Planning Council.
Matthew Miller, Planning Council.
Talia Rovin, Planning Council staff.
Hallie Cohn, Council staff.
Celinda Cantu, HIV Health Services.
Bill Hershey's Legal Referral Panel.
And yours, Planning
Council. All right, welcome everyone. This might be a shorter meeting because we're really just going to be doing a couple things, electing two co-chairs and defining our scope of work, and passing out some materials that already have received some materials. First off, let's take a look at the agenda. Any changes or updates or corrections to the agenda? Any objections to approving this agenda? All right, seeing none, approved by consensus. Any announcements?
Actually, if I could, the changes to the agenda, can we add the parking lot?
Absolutely. Let's do that.
New number 9.
Between next steps and next meeting day. Hi, can you please introduce yourself to the party?
I'm Mark Ryle from Project Open Hand.
All right, any other changes, corrections, or updates to the agenda? Any objections to approving the agenda as amended? Seeing none, agenda is approved. Announcements. No. All right, so before I go into public comment, this is a work group. If you were here and you are not a member of this work group, you are still allowed to dialogue just as any other member. The only difference is the lack of a vote. That being said as well, anyone can also consider themselves as a member of the public and so speak in the form of public comment as well. Does that make sense? All right, so that's it. Public comment. And additionally, there'll be public comment before, at the end of every agenda item. So, we move on to our first vote, election of two co-chairs for this work group. Ideally, the co-chairs will represent on the one side care and the other side providers, but that's not actually up for me to determine, it's up for you guys to determine. So, any nominations? Who would like to nominate one of the two co-chairs?
I'd like to nominate myself.
All right, is there a second to nominating Lee Jewell?
I'll second.
Matthew Miller, all right. Lee Jewell. More nominations.
I'll also nominate myself.
Is there a second to nominating Matthew Miller?
I second.
All right, so we have two council members. seconded by Mark. Any more nominations for either of the co-chairs? All right. So, seeing none, we will do a...
Actually, I'll defer.
You're removing yourself?
Yes, I'll defer.
Okay, well, that certainly makes this more straightforward. if there's no more nominations, I'll close the nominations. All those in favor of Lee Jewell's nomination as work group co-chair, please raise your hand. All right. All those in favor of Andy Shear as co-chair? Like it's unanimous all around. You are both now the co-chairs of this work group. And so, even though no doubt I'll still be talking at length, I will hand over facilitation of the work group will both.
So I'm going to welcome everybody to EHB work group. The work group, as many of you know, is created to help the Planning Council figure out what is covered under ACA here in California and what is covered under Ryan White and what we can do to maybe shift funds that will be covered under Medi-Cal expansion. So that's part of the scope of work. Does anybody else want to mention anything else about their concerns about the populations that they're serving or about this group?
Okay. So maybe if you could expand that a little bit more and talk about what we hope to glean out of this and how we hope to use that information to the Care Council side.
Sure, thanks for that. One of the things that we hope to glean out of this is to figure out what's the best use of funds here in San Francisco, especially with the Prevention and Care Planning Council. And this will be used as a recommendation that we will move to the Healthcare Planning Council for prioritization and allocation summit coming up in the fall.
So,
yeah, please.
So I think part of us is we're looking at prioritization and allocation down the road, and we've been hearing all this discussion about with the introduction of ACA that and the move of a lot of people who were on Ryan White funds into ACA funds that would be freeing up funds primarily from primary care that would then allow us to refocus those funds in arenas that maybe in the transition, if I move from Ryan White primary care to ACA primary care, perhaps the level of case management didn't follow and wasn't covered under ACA like it was covered under Ryan White. So trying to figure out where the losses were so we can fill in. And secondly, because honestly we know we're looking down the road at cuts in Ryan White, and so the first thing we would want to do is fund those cuts out of savings that we were having anyway. So we're trying to juggle all this. But quite frankly, we have no idea how this is all going to work. So if that helps.
No, that's awesome. Thank you. I think what we're all concerned with here is the system of care that we have in San Francisco and what we can do to ensure its survival in regarding some of the cuts and the transitions that are happening.
Just to clarify that when we're talking about transition to ACA, so we're talking about both insurance plans and Medi-Cal, so both plans available through Covered California. And
I think we're talking about anything that has caused movement out of the Ryan White coverage or the Ryan White subsidization of services.
I know you have some thoughts here.
Yeah, and I think that the other portion or consideration is that we sort of think about those populations that will be left out of ACA, expanded Medi-Cal, and definitely those lives where they're so chaotic that they couldn't even get there. You know, so who's left?
Can you talk a little bit about what you think those populations are?
Mm-hmm. I think that one, we're gonna have a lot of people whose immigration status and legal status in this country would disallow them from being there just from the get-go. The other is, I think, the people who are suffering from severe substance abuse or mental health issues who wouldn't be able to even get documentation or keep enough appointments to get enrolled to any of those things will be essentially uninsured and chaotic. We're also going to get new people coming in to California and probably San Francisco specifically from other states that are not participating in expanded care or have very limited access. So I mean, we'll continue to see that. We're going to certainly continue to see people who are minimally housed now, and as the economics or housing market continues to in the direction of unaffordability, we'll have people who are much more desperate and in need of services, and certainly those that are more stabilizing in nature and beyond just the primary care. So looking at that, and certainly looking at legal services when it comes to eviction or housing rights and those kinds of things. So those are sort of my thoughts. And then, you know, just the continued populations that suffer health disparities to begin with. You know, those probably won't change significantly in the short run with the implementation of ACA and expanded Medi-Cal. So,
can you talk a little bit about how Healthy San Francisco is going to remain in the picture for about a year?
Yeah. So, Healthy San Francisco, before, was definitely created primarily to act as a place that people would get their health care pretty much free of charge as they were quote-unquote uninsured. But they were given a medical home and stabilized and so forth. And so as their documentation and everything became available, they were sort of the first to be able to go through into covered California or other programs. What we found was that a lot of them couldn't produce all the required documentation in terms of either legal status in the country or having valid identification to begin with, those kinds of things. Or if in some of the programs that they just weren't here long enough as a legal resident to qualify for some of those programs. So the idea was that San Francisco, that with HIV services, we knew people were going to be all pretty much already qualified and ready to go right into these programs because documentation was pretty much close at hand and valid, meaning within 6 months, you know, to a year of date, which was perfectly acceptable. So there was a waiver created for Healthy San Francisco to allow people to continue the program and allow people to be there as they're transitioning and trying to get all of this stuff together for the application and to try to figure out which medical home, depending on the programs or insurances that they got, they would fall into. So that continues to happen, and we've expanded that now to also include HIV folks who are in Healthy San Francisco to remain there. So that's been sort of the biggest change, is that the program isn't really going to sort of disappear right away. For the majority of those.
And some of those people who will still be able to access randomized services.
Oh, absolutely. They always have been.
Yes.
Yeah, then a lot of times, the Healthy San Francisco works very similar to most medical insurance coverage. So it covers a lot of the core services, but not legal services, not housing, not food. You know, dental is almost not covered, actually. So all of those things that people are eligible for as a Ryan White client or a client by being HIV positive could access. So that is one big difference.
So we have Mark, Bill, and Ken.
Just give me a
Bill.
So I know that there's a great deal of uncertainty here. We don't know how many folks are going to be shifting their insurance and getting new insurance through the Medi-Cal expansion or through Covered California. We don't know what all the cuts are because we don't know how care is going to be configured moving forward. I would love it if there were additional resources that were freed up to support supportive services. Maybe as part of kind of our context laying, we can talk about what's going on with the 75-25. I know that there was a waiver that the city was trying to look at. And I know that we've done some creative things over the years to shift things around so that to the best of our abilities, we've been able to stay within that framework of the 75-25. And there may be new creative things that we need to do in order to assure that kind of the more intensive medical services that we know are needed for this population continue to be available. As much as I would love more funding for supportive services, I think we can all agree that we know this population needs an intensive level of support, and we don't want to see the rug pulled out of anybody. So,
great. Before we go on to Ken, would the two people that joined us please mention your name for the recording, please?
Sure. I'm Mary Lawrence Hicks, nurse practitioner, positive health program, and council co-chair.
I'm Kim Gilgenberg Castillo. I'm associate director of behavioral health at API Wellness in the Tenderloin COE.
Awesome. Thank you. Ken.
So maybe twofold. So when you brought up all these folks that may fall out of this potential because either they don't have access to get signed up or they're not capable, those people still are all fully eligible and easily enrolled in Ryan White covered services.
Absolutely.
Right? So, and I don't think there is no suggestion that Ryan White will no longer have a component of primary care that it will support, right?
Right.
So that's an issue that it's an ongoing issue for us, is to find those folks and make sure that they're...
But what I just wanted to really point out is that Ryan White now, let's say that, you know, in any given 12-month period, if we look at it in where we have our contracts now, we're seeing about 9,000 people a year, okay, approximately, from all funding sources going in and out. Of that 9,000 or so, 4,000 are getting their primary care primarily through, you know, our contracts, or at least through Ryan White General Fund Combo and Part B. When whatever portion moves out, whoever is going to be left is also, and I also want to say that part of our funding doesn't go to the most severe need. It goes, you know, it's sort of a balance, if you were to look at it by definitions in many ways, where severe need is probably, I would say, 85% of our COE population, which is about 75% of our overall primary care population. So, you know, we've got, when folks can and do get their applications together and go through, these are going to be primarily, probably more functional, higher functional folks and long-term survivors. And so what's going to be left in our pool are going to be more complex issues. So that doesn't mean that, you know, we're going to be able to necessarily serve the same number of people, because these folks are maybe going to need just a bit more resource than what they've been able to get, and we may be able to then serve them better and move them on, you know, to healthier outcomes. But that's something to consider, you know, that we don't want to necessarily think, okay, because we've got an immediate 45% free up of primary care services, that we should take all those monies or a great portion of those off. You know, so that's all that I would
say. And I guess the other thing that goes with that, and maybe if I could direct this to the positive resource for people, higher levels of benefit counseling and assistance to get people enrolled. And so we've been pushing for funds to go in those directions that are fully encompassing all levels of managed Medi-Cal, of covered California, of every component rather than a few small ones, so that there's nothing left out of the loop that somebody couldn't get counseling for. The concept of the navigators under the ACA, the concept of SHIP volunteers for Medicare, all those things. Can we kind of get a sense, because I'm sensing that's going to play a part in how quickly we can and how effectively we can get people enrolled.
So Positive Resource Center actually started a program that calling it the Equal Access to Healthcare Program, where we are hoping to provide such services to clients. So to be able to help them navigate through, you know, which plan they would qualify for based on their income, which covered California plan they would qualify for based on, you know, who their current providers are, what medications they're taking, and things like that. So we are starting this program, so I do encourage if you have clients or if you know of other providers that may have clients who need that type of service, send them our way. At this point, it's very new, so, you know, we're not really stringent on criteria in terms of eligibility, financial situation, things like that, but obviously we want to help those that are the most in need. So we're hoping with creating this program we could, you know, better serve clients to help navigate through the system, because it's going to be, it has been very complicated and it will continue to be very complicated, at least for the first year as this happens. So issues are going to come up, issues have already come up, and it's frustrating not to know the answer to some of these questions that have come up, but we're hoping to sort of be the guide for our clients.
So just to remind everybody that San Francisco Health, HIV Health Reform Task Force had a number of recommendations that we submitted to DPH, and as a result, DPH stepped up and forwarded a contract with the API, and more than adequately meeting this need, or Positive Resource Center, excuse me, more than adequately meeting this need of trying to get people to sign up where it's needed. We have one more person.
Question.
Please tell us your name.
My name is Ajwane Gerald Banks. I live in Tunloy and I'm on the HIV Prevention Council.
Awesome.
Yes. I have a question for Selinda, and I apologize if this might be a little bit more detailed, but I just wanted to make sure that you kind of understand it. So when you mentioned Health in San Francisco, Selinda, and obviously HIV-positive patients have been enrolling into Health in San Francisco while they continue to be eligible for Ryanmite services to still pay for, you know, the appropriate services. So they're enrolling in Health in San Francisco. Is that more a function of getting them into the DPH system of medical homes? And Ryanmite is not necessary. There's no other payer, right? Unless they're medical. So in this case, Ryanmite is not.
It's not.
It's not payer of last resort.
It is the
payer.
Only payer.
Yeah, it's the payer. So just wanted to make sure.
Yeah, Ryanmite always will remain the payer of last resort in that sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if people have met the criteria of Healthy San Francisco, then they're considered, in essence, sort of insured within the limits of San Francisco for specific services. But those services may be insufficient for their total care. And so those things that Ryanmite, you know, can provide, does provide. So it's sort of hopefully a healthy balance.
Mary Lawrence?
Hi, I just want to apologize. I'm so sorry that I was late, and I also didn't hear earlier, but I really just wanted to say a huge apology about both ends of that. It sounds like we're having a little bit of a global discussion, just for starters, about how this is going to work and thinking about it. And I'm really appreciating that folks that we're doing this, and that folks are recognizing that while certainly what would probably be a big percentage of the money that has been going to the actual medical visits that people have with their medical providers, that, you know, that will no longer be going for that because we'll have these other payers. That doesn't mean necessarily that the medical clinics are now going to be sort of totally have all of their services covered. And so just things to bear in mind as we think about this and drill down are that Medi-Cal and other payers don't cover lots of services that happen in clinics.
Yeah.
So this, you know, even our sort of beginning list that we have, you know, it's all kind of lumped into ambulatory patient services, but I'd really like for us to drill down to what's covered and what isn't even within that category. And I see a lot of nodding and appreciation for that, and that's great. And I'm anticipating a really wonderful process where we take money and put it where it's needed and we get it into every pocket. Right?
Absolutely.
All right, I have myself and Matthew and Andy a few different things. So were you raising your hand at the
yes.
All right, so a few different things. So with a question about 7525 waiver, just so the status on that is the city did apply for that and we are waiting for a response. So that's where that is.
Does anybody know what the 7525 formula is?
No. 75, under the HRSA guidelines, 75% of care funds need to go to what are seen as core services. 25% can go to support services. If you want to move beyond that particular percentage for each of those, you have to request a waiver and define why you need to do that.
How is the,
that's what we have done.
And how will we, in the last number of years, comply with 7525? Where are we?
Oh, I see. Yeah. We have been in compliance, to say the least, for since forever. We've been over 75. The majority of our care funds have gone to core services.
We've been at about 81,
82. Yeah, I've seen the number go between like 78 and 82.3.
Yeah, you can
go. That's only because of some creative juggling that's been done.
Right, and the biggest juggling is that we've put all of our housing services into general fund. Because with the exception of some transitional or emergency housing, but we've done that because of also the restrictions that HRSA had on those service categories in terms of length of stay and all of that kind of craziness that we did not want to be playing with. So that really helped to keep the proportion meeting that mandate because we put many of the services out that they considered so.
And we rescued some programs that lost state funding.
Right.
And so we're going to,
Yeah. Two different services we brought on. All right, so the second thing I wanted to talk about was actually to introduce the materials and pass out some news here as well. So what I'm passing out is really just a very informal list that I came up with of potential places to put funding that I've heard throughout various meetings of the Care Council and other community meetings. So I'll pass this out. There's already a couple of updates I'd like to add to it. What you see here that says Orion White Core Services versus EHB, this was from a document produced by the Task Force with material that came directly from Celinda. Thank you, Celinda. So if you'll look at this, you'll see it's color-coded quite handily. Orange on both sides of this are things that they're fighting and crossover. So if you'll see on the left side are Ryan White Core Services. Those are the ones that are eligible for ACA and such a health benefit package. So those are the service categories that we'll be looking at. Those are the service categories we'll be looking at when we figure out how much, or I guess an estimate of how much funds will be freed up. I do want to point out that second one, AIDS pharmaceutical assistance, currently we don't actually have any dollars under their local system. So that's not, there won't be any move out of care because there are currently no care dollars under that second one, AIDS pharmaceutical assistance. Does that make sense? All right, so.
Point of clarification. Mark, when we look at that, is there an assumption that every provider that is currently covered on contract with Ryan White Care Services is a provider that would be covered under ACA and most clients move over?
I think I just had a conversation with someone about this, and I think all of our current ones actually are, have that potential